This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 73.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I've got a great interview for you with Lou Mongiello, who has built a business and career out of talking about something that he loves, and that's Disney. Now, there's something quite ironic, or maybe even a little bit spooky about this, because when I listened back to the recording of the interview, which I recorded using Skype call recorder, Lou sounded amazing. I sounded like, wait for it, Minnie Mouse. And if you don't believe me, here's an example.
Yeah, I've got quite a few of the speakers that I met on the show because they were just so amazing and had just so much great content. So when Chris introduced Lou, he said, whenever he meets Lou Mongiello, they fall in love with him immediately. And that's exactly what I did. And
so that was a little bit strange and a little bit ironic. But thankfully, my podcast editor, Igor, has managed to fix it, for which I'm really grateful. And I think you're going to love this interview. But before we get to the main part of the show, I just wanted to mention something quite exciting. So as this episode goes live, it will be the day after Soulful PR Live, an event I've been working up to for months, and I feel quite sure I'll be able to say it was a great day and everything went brilliantly and everyone had a fantastic time and learned lots. And never one to rest on my laurels, I decided that I ought to follow up with another really useful event. And something that people say to me a lot is they say to me often in about January or February time, well, this year is the year I'm really, really going to focus on my PR. I've been putting it off for years. I've been making excuses, but honestly, this year is going to be the year that I'm finally going to nail it. And often I speak to them again in November, December time, and they say, oh, well, you know, I just got busy. Maybe next year, maybe next year. And somehow PR is always on their to-do list, but never gets done. So I decided I wanted to do something about this to help people who find themselves in that predicament. And I meet many, many people who say very similar things. So in September, so September the 23rd in London, and this is 2016 if you're listening in the future, I'm holding a really special event. It's called Your Year in PR. It's a one-day masterclass for business owners. In fact, anybody who really wants to nail it with their PR in 2017. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how to plan your media for the year. So how to plan your PR so that you are planning for opportunities that you know that are coming up. So as journalists, we call those on diary stories, so that you can plot out over the course of the year opportunities when it's really relevant for you and your business to be out there in the media. And from there, work out how far ahead you need to be planning and what kind of things you need to be planning. I'm also going to teach you how to plan for off diary events. So how to actually have a plan in place so that when something comes up in the news, which is really relevant to your business or your area of expertise, you can jump on it because you've got the structure and mechanisms in place to do that. And I'm also going to show you how to write really fantastic pitches that journalists will actually respond to and really be keen to run. It's going to be a really practical workshop day. What I can see in my head is a room full of enthusiastic business owners or indeed anybody who's really keen to get high profile media coverage in the coming year, sitting around tables, working with each other, looking at magazines and newspapers, helping each other out, and leaving on that day with a fully fleshed out plan for the coming year as to how they're going to approach their PR and what kind of things they're going to be doing. I think it's going to be fantastic. It's the kind of thing I've wanted to do for a long time. So it's called Your Year in PR, and the subtitle is A Media Planning Masterclass for Business Owners Who Want Big Press Coverage in 2017. So if that sounds like that's of interest, I've literally just launched it as this episode goes live. And for the first time ever, I've not done this before, but I'm recognizing that there's a need for this for the small business market. I'm offering a payment plan with installments. So if you'd like to come along, but you're thinking, well, actually, oh, it's the summer holidays, I've got a few expenses coming up, you can pay for it in two chunks. So I'll link to that in the show notes. I would absolutely love to see you there. If you've got any questions about it, then just drop me a line at janet@janetmurray.co.uk. You can tweet me at @Jan_Murray. And Instagram me, Jan Murray UK. Really, I'm everywhere. Or you can come over to my Facebook group that's the Soulful PR Facebook community. So be great to get your feedback on that. It'd be great to see some of you there. And now I think it's on with the main part of the show, thankfully, with me sounding like me and not like Minnie Mouse. So my guest today left his job as a lawyer, sold his house and moved to Florida so he could spend all day talking about Disney and make a living out of doing it. Yep, you heard right, Disney. Now, I met Lou at Tropical Think Tank, Chris Ducker's five-day mastermind in the Philippines. And there's a bit of a recurring theme here. I've had quite a few of the speakers that I met there on the show because they were just so amazing and had just so much great content. So when Chris introduced Lou, he said, when everybody meets Lou Mongello, they fall in love with him immediately. And that's exactly what I did. And also, I think everybody else there did too. So I thought, of course, I had to bring him on the show to talk about exactly that. How to build a brand that people fall in love with. So welcome to the show, Lou.
Jenna, thank you so much for having me.
So would you be able to start by telling us a little bit about your story? So how and why you do what you do today?
Yeah, so you're right. I did start out as a lawyer in New Jersey. I had an IT consulting company on the side, so I was always in the service business. Had this idea to write a book, and all I really knew about was Disney, where I had been going since I was about 3 years old and went every year with my parents. And the idea was, can I write a book and can I get it published? Long story longer, the book turned into multiple books and a website and a community and a podcast back in 2005. And it sort of snowballed inadvertently. I never thought it would be anything more than just seeing if I can get my book in Amazon and out in Barnes & Noble. And about 2007, 2008, I left a really good job as an IT manager, basically a chief technology officer for a medical imaging company. I sold my house, I brought money to my closing, and I moved to Florida. And I have really been making a full-time career out of talking about Disney World and some secondary and tertiary businesses that really have grown out of that initial passion for Disney.
Wow. And I know we talked a little bit about this when we were at Tropical Think Tank over dinner, but have you always loved Disney?
I have. I grew up, you know, I think a lot of people, the reason why the brand is so popular and such brand loyalty to Disney is because so many of us have an emotional connection to it, whether it's the movies or going to the parks. And for me, it was both. I watched the movies and I watched, you know, The Wonderful World of Color on Sunday nights with my family. And we went every year. As I was a child growing up, we drove from New Jersey to Florida, and really, I had such incredible memories with my family and wanted to learn everything I could about this place that we and tens of millions of people came back to every year, and that love turned into a passion and, like I said, really accidentally turned into a business.
And how did the book come about? You said that you had this idea that you wanted to create a book. Where did that come from?
So being in the service business, I think I had watched one too many late night infomercials because I was working so late at night. And I had this idea that I wanted to make something once and resell it. And the idea of a book came to be. And really, Janet, it was a challenge of seeing if I could write it, one, and then two, if my work could be validated by someone who was willing to publish it and put it out for me. Thinking that once I saw it in Amazon and on Barnes & Noble, that was really going to be it. That was really what I was trying to do. So I set out to write the book that I wanted to read. I love the minutiae and the details and the stories. So I wrote the first of multiple Walt Disney World trivia books.
Wow. And I love the fact that you said you wrote the book that you wanted to read yourself. Because I know lots of us who have our own businesses and we want to write books. We often think about, well, we must write the book that our audience want. But you wrote the book that you wanted to read. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, I know the word is used a lot. I believe in the power of passion, right? And I am a fan first, and there was no trivia book out there. So I didn't say, wow, this is a book I think I could sell. I went, no, this is a book I wish was out there so I could read. So I literally wrote it, not thinking, oh, I wonder how it's going to do, and I wonder what the market and the demographics are going to be. That meant nothing to me back then. In the same way, it doesn't mean anything now. I do the things that I love and interest me, with the belief and the assumption that there are other people out there that feel the same as I do and would be interested in it as well.
Right. And how did you go about actually, I mean, the bit that puts a lot of people off when it comes to writing a book and getting a book out there is that, well, how do you get it from the manuscript on your computer to being on sale in Amazon or Barnes & Noble or whatever? How did you go through that process?
Well, Janet, when I was a kid, we didn't have all this vanity publishing. You know, there was no Lulu and CreateSpace. So the idea was I had to find a publisher and I didn't have an agent. And I went to, so this is going to show how long ago it was back in 2003. I went to Barnes & Noble and I took every Disney-related travel book off the shelf. I stacked them up. I turned them over and I wrote down the name and address of every publisher. And I reached out to them and I still have 47 rejection letters from all the publishers that turned me down. But the takeaway is you only need one yes. You only need one person to say yes. And I found a publisher who was willing to take a chance and sign me to a 3-book deal. Today, if somebody was going to say, hey, I want to write a book, I would really spend some time talking with them and see if self-publishing would be an option, because some of the benefits that you got from traditional publishing years ago don't necessarily carry the same weight in 2016.
And I love the fact that you said you only need one yes. So you sent out 47, did you? And you got one yes back and the rest were rejections.
I think I sent out more. Some people just didn't even respond.
Right. So. And so how did that, what were the sales like of that first book then?
So this is such an evasive lawyer answer, and I don't mean it to be. I've never been a numbers person, Janet, and maybe that makes me not as good of a businessman.
That's a politician's answer.
I wasn't paying attention to the numbers. The fact that I got like a royalty check in the mail, my first check in the mail, blew me away. Like I just couldn't believe that this was even possible. So I wasn't monitoring my numbers very well, and certainly as a first-time author, I had no barometer to gauge what was good or what was not good. The fact that a person wanted to buy my book or ask me to sign a book was mind-blowing, you know, and incredibly validating for me. So in my mind and in my heart, the book did well because it was out and it was published and people wanted to buy it. And still, you know, 12 years later, people are still buying copies of my first trivia book.
Wow. And then how did that lead on to the next things, like your podcast?
It's really funny because I really created the publisher allowed me to sell the book on my own and sort of market the book on my own. So I didn't realize I was becoming a marketer as I was doing it. But I created a little website that had a homepage and an about page and a link to Amazon. And I started getting emails from people. And I was active on discussion forums and Usenet news groups and things like that. So I was getting emails from people with questions. I was turning those questions into articles, which is what we called blog posts back then. I started a community, my own discussion forum in 2004. And that was really a turning point for me because the first night, 29 people signed up. And I was like, oh my God, like I can't believe there's other people out there that loved it, because this was pre-social media. And that number grew exponentially and organically very quickly. And I realized there was a community out there. In 2005, I heard about podcasting. I understood that the spoken word was so much more powerful than anything that I could write. And along the way, I don't realize that this little business is forming. I'm doing a little bit of affiliate stuff with Amazon and Google AdWords. And then everything changed one day with one phone call. Somebody called me up, said, hey, I love the podcast. I love what you do. How much would you charge to let me sponsor it? And I stared at the phone because I had no idea what she was talking about. But that was a game changer for me. And I'm like, you know what? I think there may be a business here. And,
right.
And you know, that's sort of how it started me down that path.
And so how long did it take you to get from that phone call, which was kind of life-changing, to actually leaving the job as a lawyer, which Chris Tucker said to me, saw him on Saturday, actually, because I was at one of his masterminds in London, and he was saying, Lou Mongello, he hated that job. He hated being a lawyer, because I mentioned I was talking to you. And how long did it take from, you know, leaving that for you to get to that point to leave that job that you hated and then move your family to Florida and really kind of, I don't know, bump things up a notch?
So, you know, I didn't hate being a lawyer, right? I loved helping people, but I didn't get out of bed in the morning going, oh man, I can't wait to get to work today. And I love Saturdays and Sundays so I can go into the office and work, which is how I feel now, right? And this is, and I think until you realize how you're supposed to feel, you don't realize maybe how unhappy you might be at a job. So I was a lawyer. I had my consulting company on the side. I eventually left the practice and took a full-time position as the CTO for the imaging company. But it really takes years to become an overnight success. So the journey that started in 2004 and then I guess started getting my first sponsor in 2005, 2006, it wasn't until about 2008 until I said, look, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't have a business plan, but I know that in order for me to do it and to give it a shot and not have any regrets 5, 10, 20 years ago that I don't take a chance in doing it, I need to be in Florida and I need to go down there and figure out how to do it. you know, I think there's a fine line between brilliance and stupidity. If it wouldn't have worked, they would have like, oh, you see, you moron, you should have stayed a lawyer. But fortunately, it did, you know, better than I ever would have expected.
And your house does actually, you can see the Disney castle from your house, can't you?
I can see the fireworks and I can hear the train whistle in the morning. So yeah, I'm relatively close.
My daughter is so impressed. She's 10 and she's so impressed that I've met somebody who does that. And she's like, hey, you're talking to that guy. You're talking to that Disney guy, the one who can see the castle from his window. And it's really interesting what you said about your job. I really kind of identify with that because I was a school teacher before I went into journalism and eventually went into doing what I do now. And I felt the same, really. I didn't hate what I was doing. I quite liked it. And I liked helping people. I always liked helping people. But I didn't realize until I started doing something that I loved just how much better that would be and how brilliant it is to get up every day and feel excited about doing your work. So it's kind of really, really interesting point. And from what you were saying at Tropical Think Tank, it feels like community has been at the heart of everything that you've done from those first sort of 20 odd people that you had in your first forum to your podcast listeners. How have you built that massive community that you've got now?
You're 100% right. The most important integral part of my business is people. People ask me, if somebody asks me what I do, you know, I'm in the people business. We are in the people business. And the idea of community is what allows me to do what I do. This community of people that grew around what I was doing. And obviously, I'm fortunate because I pick a topic, I'm passionate about a topic that tens of millions of people are interested in. And it's one that, you know, people want to belong to. So when I started a discussion forum and this community was developing, that's when I really realized that I was not the only person sitting in my basement that had loved Disney as much as I did. And, you know, a term I use all the time, Janet, is, you know, people talk about their listeners as fans or their readers as fans. And I really don't like that word at all. I look at people not as fans, but as friends. And I think you need to look at and treat them that way because that's how they look at you and they treat you. The people that listen to your show, Janet, feel like they know you so much better than obviously you know them. You need to reciprocate. You need to treat them that way. You need to care about them genuinely that way. That builds a real organic community that thrives and that they encourage other people to join into. So when people ask me about my marketing tactics and strategies, I'm like, I don't have any. You know, I don't spend any money. I've never spent money on marketing or advertising because the people in my community who are your friends become your most loyal evangelists and they help spread the word for you.
That's really interesting. I mean, it's just so interesting to hear you say call them friends. And I totally agree with you. But I think we talked a little bit about this when we were at Tropical Think Tank. But if your community are your friends and you're treating them as such, how do you then sort of maintain boundaries so that you still get to have a personal life? And I mean, I know with my own community, I've got this amazing community and they're all lovely and I consider them all to be friends too. But there's certain things that I think, you know, people texting me at weekends or sending me Facebook messages or whatever, it can be a bit tough because I want to help, but it's the weekend and I'm supposed to be kind of, you know, with my family. How do you maintain boundaries when you have a community of friends?
You know, it's interesting because when I was starting to do this, I didn't think it out, right? I didn't think out ahead of time. And hindsight being 2020, I still might not have changed anything. I'm very transparent to a certain degree. And yes, I have certain boundaries and there are certain things that, you know, I don't share and I don't post. But the way I communicate with people primarily, like my Facebook is my personal profile. I don't have like a Lou Mangiello page. And yes, there's a WW Radio page. But the way I connect with people and the way people search to connect with me is through my personal profile. And I'm okay with that. So my profile is a combination of the stuff I do at Disney and the stuff I do on the entrepreneurial side of things and stuff I do in my personal life. And I know I just sort of have my sort of self-limiting boundaries. I don't post a lot of pictures of my kids, but by the same token, I sometimes have my kids on the show. When we do like a live dining review or we do a cruise or something, they'll come on and talk about their experience.
Yeah,
and
my daughter is so jealous of that. I've told her about that as well. She's really jealous of that.
We have to get her to come on one of the Disney cruises.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She thought that sounded marvelous.
She would love it. But I mean, obviously, there are certain things, you know, home life and personal wise I don't share. And there's some things I do because I want people to understand that that's how I'm treating them and that's how I'm trusting them. And the community is really good about self-moderating and self-policing and treating. You treat them with respect and they will treat you with respect in return.
Mm, Yeah. And then what do you do when people do overstep the boundaries at all, or people are messaging? How do you do it? Do you just kind of politely ignore it, or do you kind of just say, hey buddy, it's the weekend, I'll catch up with you next week, or can you post this in the Facebook group or whatever?
You know, maybe do as I say, not as I do, but like I answer every message, every tweet, every email personally, which means I don't necessarily get to them right away.
Yeah.
So I get to them as quickly as I can. I don't have somebody do it for me, because if somebody's going to take the time to email me or message me, I'll certainly give them the courtesy of a personal response. You know, if I can't do something, if I can't accommodate a request, and oftentimes people are incredibly welcoming and generous, saying, hey, we're in Disney World, man. I would love to say hi or buy you a snack or take you to dinner. If I can't do it, I respectfully decline and just say, unfortunately, I'm just not available. But for the most part, people have been kind and respectful, and you know, the opposite has happened, Janet. People are so kind and generous to me. They send me things in the mail, you know, thoughtful, wonderful gifts. Or, you know, if they know that I'm going through, like I just had eye surgery the other day, the messages that I get of concern and care and saying, hey, what can I do to help you, is amazing. And that's the sort of the power and the importance of community to me. So that outweighs any sort of, I wouldn't even call it inconvenience.
And what sort of things do people send you? Is this a curious journalist in me wants to know?
So
Disney stuff.
So, you know, as a podcaster, you know, the power of the medium is that we reach people around the planet.
Yeah.
So whether it's a card or a letter, you know, a handwritten letter means so much to me. But for years, you've met me. I love my food. I get food sent to me from around the world, and I do live video every Wednesday. I've been doing it for like 8 years. So they just want to see like the different things that I'll eat from around the world. I will tell you the two craziest things I ever got was a huge box came one day. I opened it up. There's a 2-page letter there, a framed picture, and I pull off the paper and there's fur. And I'm like, what is this? And I pull it out of the box and it's a giant, full-blown, like camera ready. I could have walked onto the set. It's an Ewok costume from Star Wars.
Oh my God.
The helmet and the gloves and the pants and the claws and and the woman made it for me. It's like,
wow.
I can't imagine how much time. And she said, yeah, I saw you at a meet and I sort of sized you up and figured out how, you know, tall. And she made me, the Ewok costume.
Oh my God, that's amazing. And I guess as people listening now, and I should have probably said this, but you've probably worked out already that Lou's podcast is, I mean, you just have hundreds of thousands of listeners, don't you, all around the world. And you've won numerous awards for your travel podcast, and you've had 1.6 million views on your, WDW radio YouTube channel.
It just rolls off the tongue. I know.
So, I mean, we're talking like scale, like loads and loads of people. And I guess there's some people listening now who are saying, Lou's lucky. He's got this great thing, Disney, that loads of people are interested in. But I'm imagining that what you would say is you can do this, whatever kind of business you've got, whatever you're into, you can create this kind of community of friends who love what you do and support you.
Absolutely. And yes, I'm fortunate because of the topic that I'm interested in. But I think that whatever that thing is that you love, you are not alone. You know that there are other people out there that love it as much as you do. So if it's TV shows from the 80s or, I don't know, fantasy football or card games or whatever it is, there are other people that have that interest. You need to become, you know, the magnet that's going to attract the people that you want to attract, right? It's, you're no longer confined to like high school, like, oh, just the people that happen to be in the high school. There's nobody else that likes this show or this thing. You have the ability to reach literally billions of people around the world, and there are other people that like it. There's a famous quote that I use all the time by Randy Pausch, who was the last lecturer. He says, the size of your audience doesn't matter. What matters is that they're listening. So if you find a group of people, and I don't like when people say, oh, I only have 40 downloads. Man, if those 40 people showed up at your house on Sunday night and be like, wait, okay, Janet, tell us what you have to talk about this week. You'd be like, holy cow, I need more hors d'oeuvres. If those people love you, Janet, and they care about what you're saying, and you care for them in return, when you need to sell them something, when you need to offer them something, those people, not to use the marketing, but those people will convert because of how you feel about them and the way you treat them. I have somebody that I work with now. She's in a very, very niche down space. She goes, oh, you know, I only had 7 people watching my live broadcast the other day, but 2 of those people bought her product. I'm like, That's a huge relative number. So care about the people that are already there and let them help you grow your audience larger.
And so from what you're saying, it sounds like there's no kind of strategy behind it apart from just kind of, you know, treat these people in your community as your friends and work with passion.
You know, the marketers are going to hate me for saying this, but I don't believe that there is a blueprint. I don't use a funnel. I don't have a drip sequence. I don't have all these sort of upsell things. It's just not how I do it because I don't come from the sales and marketing background. It really has been and continues to be, even at scale, a very organic type of grassroots thing. And it's, I know this sounds so fluffy, but it's just based on the philosophy of caring.
Right. Yeah. And totally, that sort of comes across when you talk about what you do. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the things that you do, because when we were at Tropical Think Tank, we were talking about your Disney cruises and you take people on these cruises with you. You have meetups all over the world. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the ways that you engage with your community? Because you do a lot of it online, but you do a lot of stuff in person as well.
Yeah, I think we're so busy looking at our phones and worrying about creating the content online and the tweets and the likes and the follows and the shares and the snaps and all these other things that we forget about the importance of the face-to-face. And I call it, you know, I say that nothing beats a handshake and a hug. And I believe that. And for the past, oh gosh, 8+ years, I've been doing monthly free meetups in Walt Disney World, just saying, hey, I'm going to be here at such and such a time. It's not for them to come and meet me. It's so I could meet them and thank them and look them in the eye and shake their hand and hear their story and for them to meet each other. Again, I'm trying to facilitate the growth of the community. And when you do those things, when you can create those real relationships and real friendships in real life, when it does come time to say, hey, I'm going to do this event, this paid event, we're going to do a group cruise, we're going to do a group trip to somewhere, they want to be in it because they already feel like they belong to the community. So the face-to-face stuff is far and away the most important aspect of what I do. And people say, well, you spend so much time, like, what do you get out of these free meetups? And there's no quantifiable return on the dollar investment of the time. But, you know, for the people who are thinking about, well, how do I... You can turn those relationships into revenue later on. And it's not a strategy. It's just the way it happens because of what you are really creating.
Right. Okay. I mean, that's so refreshing to hear because I have so many people on the show who talk about sales funnels and upsells and all of this stuff. But you're really saying it's all about relationships and it's all about caring and friends. And it's very much in line with the Soulful PR brand, in fact. I mean, I try and just give people as much great free content as possible. I try and share as much and help as much. And I guess my hope is that when people do have a need and they want to buy something, then they'll think of me. And that's probably the most that I can hope for. It feels very much in line with what I'm trying to do here. And the last thing I really wanted to ask you about was about press, because you've had some really good media coverage. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that's come about? And I bet you're going to say relationships.
Well, it is. You know, when I first started out with my book, I did a lot of it on my own. I was reaching out. I was just hustling and I was reaching out to newspapers and radio and TV or magazines or anybody that would have me on. But it really didn't progress until much later. And the catalyst and the story is that it really came from out of one of these meets of the months, right? So we talk about the return on the investment. I'm doing a meetup in Disney World. A listener comes over, says hello, we're chatting. His wife comes over and hands me a card, says, hey, I didn't even realize, like, oh, he was telling me all about this. I didn't realize what you do. I'm a producer for the local TV news station. Here's my card. Would you ever be interested in coming on if, you know, there's something to talk about? I said, sure. I was so excited. I'm like, oh, she's never going to call. 3 days later, she called me because news broke at Disney. She said, can you come in and chat about it? That relationship led to me going on that station once, twice, three times a month for the past however many years. That's the kind of publicity and PR that you just can't buy, but you are so desperate to try and get. And it really just comes from her knowing what I did. And because she saw me face to face and saw, okay, he's not going to be a complete idiot on camera. I could, you know, I'm okay having him come on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's kind of show, not tell, isn't it? And I mean, I know maybe I'm biased because I run events, but when I'm talking to people about some of the events I run, which have journalists at them, and I'm saying to people, look, if there's one thing you could invest in, it's coming to this particular event, because if you can just sit with a journalist and have a chat with them and build a relationship without, you know, selling, feeling like you're selling yourself or trying to sell yourself, just talking to them like a human being, another person, and building that relationship up, then that will pay dividends. That will be more beneficial for you than any kind of marketing spend or advertising or that kind of thing. Just kind of sitting down and having a conversation. And can you tell us quickly about some of the other places that you've been featured? Because you've got quite a list of news outlets on your website there.
Yeah, I think that really is what sort of sparked most of the TV stuff. You know, that led to me going to Atlanta and New York and Las Vegas and some of the other major markets talking about it. The relationships led to some of the not just local newspapers, but USA Today, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, some of the online coverage that led to some of the larger online coverage. I don't even know some of the things. And it's funny because the contact would sometimes start about the Disney aspect of things. And then when they would hear the story, they would say, oh, you have sort of an interesting entrepreneurial journey. I'm going to put you in touch with so-and-so. And now all of a sudden I was getting featured in business publications and getting approached from a business side of things, because what I had done and sort of the way I had done it, going from, you know, the lawyer to, you know, solo entrepreneur, was something that was of interest to people. So you never really know where the path is going to lead you and where some of the relationships are going to lead you. And that's why, you know, I told you at Tropical Think Tank, I just love what you do and think that it's brilliant.
Oh, thank you. It's so nice to hear from someone like you as well. And that leads me nicely into the very last thing I wanted to ask you, because it's something that I'm really interested in doing over the next year or so. I'd love to speak around. I think I told you at Tropical Think Tank that what really kind of drives me is I want to talk to people around the world about this stuff. And I always feel like I want to disrupt the PR industry and just say, look, actually, there's some practice out there that's going on that this isn't the best way to do it. Actually, this is just about building relationships and getting out there and talking to people and having a great story to tell the media. And certainly I'm very interested in getting speaking opportunities. So what tips would you have? And I know that my audience are as well. What tips would you have for getting bigger and better speaking opportunities?
Go there as an attendee and get to know the people who are running the event. You know, the first speaking opportunity I had gotten was for a conference known as New Media Expo. It used to be called the Podcast Expo and Blog World and all these things. But I went for a couple of years and I started meeting people and talking to them about my story. And as people heard about me, then they came to me and said, hey, would you like to speak? And I was like, me? Well, I don't know. You know, I'm not a speaker. But, you know, one speaking gig leads to another. And I go to as many conferences as I can as an attendee to learn and share. And then once you do that, and then again, I know it sounds redundant, but making relationships with the people who are the organizers of that event and show them, not pitch them, but show them what you are able to bring and offer and the value that you want to give back to the attendees. That's how it's led to. And look, you, Janet, you know, you take a lot of free gigs for years. You know, you do free gigs for years. And that's how you eventually get to the point where you're able to start charging for it.
Right. And that's making me feel better, because I think I'm doing the right things. I'm speaking at a conference this year in the UK, which I went to as a delegate last year. And I was like, right, I want to speak here next year. So when the call for speakers came out, I was like, right, I'm going to pitch myself to this one. There's another one I'm going to next month, actually. So that's good to hear that I'm doing the right things. So thank you so much. It's been so, so useful. And it's a real breath of fresh air, I think, to have somebody come on and just say, this is all about relationships. This is all about passion. This is all about just treating people as your friends. It's a real kind of breath of fresh air. So thank you so much for that. And where can we find you if we want to know more about you?
So all of my Disney stuff can be found at wdwradio.com. You can find out more about me and speaking and entrepreneurial stuff at loumongello.com. And I am at loumongello on all the social.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate you having me on.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, why not head over to my Soulful PR Facebook community? It's simply the Soulful PR Facebook community, and I'd love to see you there.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.